TUC Radio, San Francisco. Time of useful consciousness. Plutonium fuel for nuclear reactors. Mary Olson with Jackie Cabasso. In January of 2002, 9 anti-nuclear activists from the U.S. met with the Australian physician Helen Caldicott to discuss what she calls the new nuclear danger. They met for a day of private discussion on how to best resist the Bush administration's expansion of all nuclear programs, from Star Wars to nuclear weapons and reactors. At the end of the day, I had the opportunity to tape a conversation between Mary Olson, the expert on nuclear reactors with the Nuclear Information and Resource Service, and the executive director of the Western States Legal Foundation, Jackie Cabasso. Only weeks earlier, a significant announcement by the Bush administration had reversed a 20-year-old policy. The U.S. and Russia are now preparing to reprocess plutonium from nuclear weapons as fuel for nuclear reactors. It is the so-called Mixed Oxides, or MOX, program. In last week's broadcast, Mary and Jackie went over the basic technology of the 103 operating nuclear reactors in the U.S., and why burning plutonium is dangerous and produces waste that is even more volatile than the waste product from uranium fuel. It became apparent that the MOX program is a huge subsidy of taxpayer money to the reactor industry and would set back the development of alternative energy. Today's conclusion of the conversation begins with insights into the construction of nuclear warheads, the so-called pits. How dangerous is the process of taking them apart to recover the plutonium? And is there a secret agenda to use the planned plutonium processing plant for the production of new weapons-grade plutonium? Here is Mary Olson from the Nuclear Information and Resource Service describing the process of dismantling a nuclear warhead.
Basically, you've got this weapons pit that's been taken out of a nuclear bomb, right? And it's a spherical object that has a complex interior shape, and it's wrapped up in other metal. And quite frankly, this plutonium, if nobody's got it wired up to a button in some crazy president somewhere, is not a huge threat to anybody. It's in a pretty darn stable, storable form. But let's just establish that long-term storage of pits is a viable option if you're not worried about them being stolen or used by some future administration or some current administration. Another alternative was to make this material that's in those pits highly radioactive without putting it in a reactor, which would be easy enough because we've got plenty of highly radioactive waste. You just turn that plutonium in a relatively stable form. They were going to cook it into a ceramic and then surround it with highly radioactive waste around it. So that would have been relatively little processing, fewer steps, less waste generated, and it would take care of existing highly radioactive waste, give it a mission, make everybody feel pretty good about it. My organization, we don't trust the DOE to do anything, so I'm not actually advocating that. But what most people don't recognize is that plutonium pits are not pure plutonium. They have over 27 ingredients that are more secret than what's in a cigarette. We happen to know that one of those ingredients was added to make the plutonium more malleable so that they could machine it into this complex shape. And that's an element called gallium. It's not radioactive, but it does interact with other metals. And the type of metal that's around reactor fuel is usually a zirconium alloy. Gallium and zirconium go crazy together, and the gallium attacks and eats up the zirconium. So they have to remove these other things in order to put plutonium from a nuclear bomb into reactor fuel. It has to be highly, highly purified, down to parts per billion. Now, here comes the interesting rub. Weapons-grade plutonium has not only plutonium-239 with its 24,000-year half-life that's just going to sit there for a very long time, it also has other isotopes of plutonium like 238 that are used in situations like powering the Cassini probe and other things. And these decay much more rapidly and result in decay products. So while they're keeping those pits, those 12,000 pits you mentioned, for future use, they're not actually up to snuff when it comes to those bomb designers who want their bomb to go off exactly the way they designed it to go off. And so there's a very large interest in getting what I'm calling designer-grade plutonium available to the weapons community, either to refurbish the existing weapons or, if new weapons are under production, to make new pits. So it's a deep concern to us that the proposed facilities that would be at the Savannah River site, one is for taking the pits apart and processing them and taking out all these other byproducts. It will generate millions of gallons of highly active, now this is all alpha activity for the most part, so we can't call it high-level waste, but highly, highly concentrated U-235, various plutoniums, radium, americium. And the only plan that the Department of Energy has for this waste is to put it into large tanks that are at the Savannah River site that they're supposedly emptying and cleaning up, that are currently leaking into saucers below them, and they have to sort of harvest the leakage and put it back in. And so that's their only plan for what to do with these millions of gallons of new waste that would be generated by this process. And then they want to build a plutonium fuel factory to actually make this fuel, and we don't have one in the United States. It would be a really big facility designed to do a whole lot more plutonium fuel production than this surplus plutonium would ever result in. And when they went to get the Nuclear Regulatory Commission involved, because Congress said that the NRC should be the ones to license this new factory, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission turned around and rewrote all their regulations so that they're ready to license any plutonium fuel factory anywhere. Whereas when this whole program was introduced by the Department of Energy, it was couched as just these 50 tons of the surplus plutonium, just this once, we're just going to run it through one time. And instead, what we're seeing is the specter of large-scale use of plutonium fuel in the United States, and a return to the separation of plutonium, possibly not only from surplus nuclear weapons, but possibly from that highly radioactive irradiated fuel that we talked about before. And what I need to say about that before I stop is that the separation of plutonium from reactor waste, high-level reactor waste, is undoubtedly the largest environmental impact step of the entire nuclear outfit. The releases of radioactive gases from the sites where this happens in France and Britain and Russia are measured in Chernobyls per year. And the releases to the seas of those outfits in France and Great Britain have absolutely contaminated whole sections of the Mediterranean and the Irish Sea and the Norwegian Sea. So the thought that our government is headed headlong towards this is not a small factor.
No, not at all. That process is, that's called reprocessing in those countries, and that's the, what you're talking about. You've mentioned alternatives for dealing with the plutonium pits from dismantled nuclear weapons. And I just wanted to endorse the idea that they can be stored in the long term more safely than going through this process that you've described. And one of the ways to make them safer from terrorists or to prevent their reuse in new bombs by the United States government would be to simply physically deform them by banging them with a hammer or by cutting them in half, and they know that, or by stuffing it with a wire so that they can be more or less permanently disabled and would have to be completely remanufactured to be used in bombs. So that's another option out there. That I wanted to use that transition to talk about, you know, what are the alternatives? We are facing a situation where the United States still has about 12,000 assembled nuclear weapons in various states of deployment and storage, a huge number, even after the cuts, that the unilateral cuts that Bush has announced, which are very deceptive. It's basically rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. More will be in storage than actively deployed under that plan. And there's a program underway to continue research and development of more usable nuclear weapons with new military capabilities, perhaps using some of this designer-grade plutonium that you've talked about. Well, what are the alternatives? And specifically, what are the alternatives to plutonium storage, if you will, or disposition? And that's one question. And the other question is, what are the alternatives to this nuclear energy path that we continue to be on, despite all of the accidents, dangers, expenses, and so on? And that's an important question right now, because obviously energy is at the heart of all kinds of global conflicts that the United States is playing a big role in. So this is a pretty open-ended question, but talk about some alternatives, because that's what I think gives us direction and hope for the future.
Well, there's good news, Jackie, and we need it. But the fact is that all of this is a relic of not only the last century, but the last millennium, and I believe the last age, because we have survived the nuclear age, and if we don't do something quick, we may not. And so I think the fact of the matter is, people in every country, on every continent, are united in the perception that the world would be a far safer place if we had no nuclear weapons at all, and if we did not use nuclear energy at all. So I think, you know, as much as right now there's sort of this fervor and this fear going around about security and terrorism, underneath that is a bedrock that was identified in the 1990s and the 1980s in various opinion polls and questionnaires and research projects, that something like 7 out of 10 people in this country believe that getting rid of nuclear weapons entirely would make the world safer. And the reason I repeat that, even now, is the fact that we can look around in the grocery store, in our places of work, in our schools, and know that if we believe in nuclear disarmament and we believe in a nuclear-free world, the majority of those around us agree with us. Even if they're of a different political party, even if they're a different gender, even if they're a different age, even if they recently came to this country, the majority of people actually already agree with this. And so how do we manifest that? How do we bring it forward? How do we do it? And the even better news is that every time the corporations try to do something like this mixed oxide fuel or new weapons production or whatever, it turns back around to the fundamental truth that this stuff is not good for us. And more people wake up and more people realize we have a problem. And quite frankly, I'm going to use a different example right now. But the federal government is trying to approve Yucca Mountain for a permanent nuclear waste dump for this so-called spent fuel that we were talking about, and also for the plutonium someday. It's a rubble heap adjacent to the Nevada nuclear weapons test site on traditional Western Shoshone lands, right near the Nellis Air Force Base. It's truly a sieve. It will not hold the radioactivity, but what's going to happen before we even get that far is, if they go forward with this, is tens of thousands of high-level nuclear waste shipments through our major cities. And all of a sudden, a whole lot of people are going to wake up to this whole issue and all of these concerns who are not currently awake. We've been talking about this because we're aware of it for the last 10 years, but it's nothing compared to when these shipments actually start rolling and what that's going to mean to the dialogue. And so every time the nuclear industry thinks that they're moving forward, it's actually those of us who are working for the preservation of life and the healing of the planet who get to go forward, because they inevitably go backwards. And so the alternative to plutonium, well, stop making it. And where is it made? In reactors. Every single reactor on the planet that uses uranium fuel makes plutonium. So when arms control people talk about plutonium production, I start laughing, because they're just talking about the separation of the plutonium. It isn't until we turn off all the reactors that we stop actually making plutonium. How can we turn off the reactors? Well, it's really very simple. For every dollar we spend on efficiency, which is not the same thing as going without. Efficiency is when you have the same product or the same service, but you can look at the bottle and say, aha, I made this bottle with less energy than this other bottle. And they're both bottles. And it doesn't matter what the source of the energy was. If you're making the same product with less energy, that's more efficient. And efficiency has, in the United States, the capacity to displace the entire nuclear generating outfit and a good chunk of the coal generating outfit if we only came to the level of efficiency that Germany and Japan have. Germany and Japan today get 4 to 5 times more product, more service for every unit of energy than we do here in the United States. If we want to be patriotic, in my humble opinion, we need to adopt energy efficiency as our number one commitment and our number one goal. And there's actually a beautiful website right now that says Take the Patriot Pledge, and it's focused on oil, but I think it should also be focused on electrical usage. And every corporation that produces anything should be thinking about how to do it with less power. Everybody who delivers a service should be thinking about how to do it with less power. And the flip side of all this is the ability to rebuild our economy through investment in renewable energy. And if every roof in this country was a photovoltaic electrical generating roof, we could power an economy at least 3 times the size of the one we have now, just by using the roofs we have, without sacrificing another square acre of land for solar power. That's not touching wind. In the state of South Dakota alone, if the wind potential was realized, we could power the entire country at the level we are at now. So we have tremendous resources. We have the ability to rebuild our economy by investing in those resources. And through the efficient use of power, we could phase out nuclear almost overnight.
Is it 20% that's provided by nuclear power? Is that the correct number?
It is a correct number that 20% of our electric power, not our total energy. Total energy is much less is nuclear. But electric power is 20%. However, the single largest consumer of electricity in the United States is the production of uranium fuel. It consumes 1%, which is 1/100th of the total electrical consumption of the United States. And so, in fact, the net contribution is only 19%, because if you turn off the fuel production at the same time as you turn off the reactors, you only lose 19%.
You mentioned that there are 4 commercial nuclear reactors in the southeast that are going to be converted to use this mixed oxide fuel. And you also said that there is going to be a new plutonium processing facility built at the Savannah River site in Georgia to fabricate that fuel. Do you know what the timeline is when we can expect this facility to begin production, when we can expect those reactors to be ready to start operating using this fuel, and if that all goes forward, what we might expect in terms of other reactors around the country being converted for mixed oxide fuel use?
Where we're at right now in January of 2002 is licensing operations. The proposed factory is trying to get a construction permit. And this factory would be built at the Savannah River site, which was the largest bomb production facility well, they're all big, but one of the biggest in the U.S. Nuclear weapons production complex. It's now supposedly in cleanup, but this new mission is being put there. And I'm very proud to say that three Southeastern organizations, Georgians Against Nuclear Energy, or GAIN in Atlanta, Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League, or BREDL, has an office now in Aiken, and a group called Environmentalists, Inc., based in Columbia, South Carolina. All three stepped forward and have intervened in that license process and have been granted party status, and very significant issues around security, tracking the plutonium to be sure that none has been lost, environmental impacts, concerns about earthquakes in that area, are all going to be examined when they would not have been unless these local organizations had stepped forward and said, hey, wait a second. So if the process goes forward without delay, and we don't know at this point whether there'll be delays, fuel is expected to be produced by the proposed factory in about 5 years. They hope to apply for their operating, you know, they want to build the thing in 2 years and apply for their operating license at the end of that point and go through that licensing phase, which again will be an opportunity for people who are directly affected to come forward and say, hey, wait a second, what do you mean? You know, you forgot this, you didn't look at that, this analysis isn't good enough. So there's actually two licensing steps in the factory. The reactors are currently listed Catawba 1 and 2, McGuire 1 and 2, all four owned by Duke Energy of some fame in California and some fame in the Southeast as a major nuclear utility. And those four are the only referred, you know, in all the materials and all the briefings, all the view charts, everything in all the meetings, they only talk about those four reactors. In fact, there's two more named in the contract. They are North Anna 1 and 2. They're owned by Dominion, which is based in Virginia. And the reactors are not far from Washington, D.C. They're also not far from the Twin Oaks community, which is deeply concerned about this. So we're trying to kind of figure out what's going on with those additional two. But in any case, once this whole process, if it succeeds in jumping all the hurdles and people are shut out, as traditionally we usually are, even when we step forward and intervene, they find some way to get around the concerns people raise. So if there is fuel produced and if it is put into these reactors and they manage to get the amendments to the reactor licenses, which again will be challenged, right now they're trying to extend the time that these reactors will be allowed to operate by additional 20 years for each. And we challenged, Nuclear Information Resource Service and Blue Ridge Environmental Defense League, both challenged those license renewals because Duke was trying to say, oh, we're just using uranium fuel. This is just a normal license renewal. This is no big deal. And we went in and said, wait a second. You're under contract to use plutonium fuel, and you say you're going to do it, and you're not considering the fact that at least 35 of the next 40 years could potentially be plutonium. And just last week, the judges agreed with us that this must be considered at this time. And so they have to now crank into a whole analysis they weren't planning to do. But if they get that done and they manage to load the fuel into these reactors, without a doubt, there will be as many reactor operators lined up behind Duke as possible because they will all stand to get taxpayer dollars in the mail. And people who have nuclear electricity in their light bulbs and in their microwave ovens and in their electric blankets and air conditioners will pay on their electric bill for their power. And when they write their check to Uncle Sam for their income taxes, they will pay a second time for that same electricity. And I can't say it enough times, this fuel is more dangerous, it is more deadly, and we ourselves will pay for it with our tax dollars. So we're pretty darn determined in the Southeast. You know, it's an area of the country that likes nuclear technology because people have not gotten the real story down there very often. The media is pretty owned in that region. Environmental groups are funded by the nuclear utilities, and so the mainstream local chapters of groups like Sierra Club don't want to come out and challenge this idea. But there's a lot of grandmothers who have been connected to a whole lot of other grandmothers, and they're the ones who are always talking to each other and getting the newsletters and on the email lists, and people are getting together, and there's a very hearty group of people who are saying, well, this is in our front yard, this is in our backyard, this is in our side yard, we better get together and we better figure out what to do about it. And we know that it's a global problem. And I go back to the fact that 7 out of 10 people are with us. And so we're standing up and we're saying, hey, guys, you've been lied to. This is a bad idea.
Well, that makes a lot of sense to me. We could get off of our dependency on foreign oil. We could rebuild our economy. We could remove many of the environmental and security threats that we now face. So I think you've given us a very useful prescription. You've given us notice that we can still act before the trucks carrying the used fuel are coming through our communities. And you've also let us know that it's going to take a long time, but we're going to win. I'm very encouraged. Thanks.
That was Jackie Cabasso, Executive Director of the Western States Legal Foundation, closing her conversation with Mary Olson from the Nuclear Research and Information Service on an optimistic note. I recorded their conversation on January 26, 2002, at the end of a strategy meeting by 9 anti-nuclear campaigners on how best to resist the new nuclear programs being developed by the Bush administration. This meeting, organized by veteran anti-nuclear campaigner Helen Caldicott, was held in Contra Costa County, California. A sulfur dioxide cloud from a refinery accident nearby prevented us from leaving the house, and we spent the time sharing the story you just heard. I hope you have a pen handy to take down a phone number. You can find more information on the Mixed Oxides program on TUC Radio's website, www.tucradio.org. That's tucradio.org. Look under Newest Programs. You can get a copy or a printed transcript of the full 90-minute tape on plutonium for nuclear reactors for $12. TUC Radio is listener-supported and free to all radio stations. Your tape order helps us stay on the air. Call us toll-free anytime at 877-TUC-TAPE for information on how to order. You can get your tape by mail or credit card, by phone or on the web. Our toll-free phone number 877-TUC-TAPE translates into 877-882-8273. My name is Maria Gallardon. Thank you for listening. Give us a call.